I am an industry disruptor. They're all pedigree, and all their inventories and all their everything is on the pedigree. And it's a lousy predictor.
What are the things that you're looking for biologically at that kind of first point to make a decision?
We've got film, we've got internal organ scans, we're looking down the throat, we're x-raying them. We do look at their pedigree. Pedigree horses is kind of self-fulfilling often because they get the best trainers and the best veterinarians and the best everything. But it's not a good predictor. You're going to tell me you can't throw snake eyes twice or you can't throw it three times in a row. It happens, but you got to be there to look. You can't look at the catalog page that describes the pedigree. You must look at the horse. Low probability events happen, and I've got the tech to find them.
Hello, future billionaires. Welcome to another episode of the Invest Like a Billionaire podcast. We've got a fun episode for you today and great timing with the Kentucky Derby just behind us. This is a fun episode. I'm going to talk with Jeff Sader of EQB. I was super excited about this episode because I'm personally a huge fan just of horses in general. I think they're a cool animal. I mean, horse racing has always been something that's been appealing to me for multiple levels. And Jeff has been in this space for over 40 years, and he is taking the concepts of Moneyball, data analytics, and using that to create better selection criteria for finding the horses that will be the winners. He's been doing this for a long time, has his own proprietary database, and he talks all about just the world of horse racing, why pedigree is not the end-all be-all, and how he goes about looking at horses. It really kind of sets the stage of what it looks like to get into this space as an investor who wants to kind of go big in the racehorsing space. I think you're really going to enjoy this episode. I thought it's really fun. A little bit different, right, than some of the things we do. But again, our goal here is to educate and help you enjoy. Thanks so much.
This is the Invest Like a Billionaire podcast, where we uncover the alternative investments and strategies that billionaires use to grow wealth. The tools and tactics you'll learn from this podcast will make you a better investor and help you build legacy wealth. Join us as we dive into the world of alternative investments, uncover strategies of the ultra wealthy, discuss economics, and interview successful investors.
Welcome back to another episode of the Invest Like a Billionaire podcast. This is Ben Frazier, your host today, and I'm joined by our guest, Jeffrey Sader. Super excited to have him on. He's with EQB. And it's actually great timing to bring you on because we just, as we're recording this, had the Kentucky Derby last weekend. Horse racing is on a lot of people's minds. And Invest Like a Billionaire, right? The point of the show is to talk about different things that ultra wealthy are doing to, you know, make a return that are outside of stocks of fun. And you've been in this space for over 40 years, Jeff. So thanks for coming on the show. And tell us a little about your background and kind of what you're doing in this space of horse racing.
Thank you very much for having me. And I was really the Moneyball horse racing, although I predate Moneyball like 20 years, bringing big data analytics and science and professional management to try and select young unraced horses and then manage them through the racing career. And I worked with started out working with the United States Olympic Sports Medicine Committee when it was first created, and I learned a lot and decided, you know, we could do this with horses, where it's been eyeball and intuition for 300 years and a very small click. And 99% of the people were losing money. A lot of them didn't care because they had so much. I was, I said, I can do better. And I paid a lot less. I paid at or below auction prices for my major clients, made them money. And we won the first Triple Crown in 37 years with one of the horses out of the program with American Pharoah in 2015. It was on the front page center of New York Times, the article about it. And if you turn to the center, you saw my picture. And I tell people it was easy. It only took 35 years and several million dollars of private research and starving for the first 20 years while we built databases and equipment and did the research. When I left the Olympics sports medicine, I thought I would just adapt the technologies, but the data did not exist on elite racehorses. And the equipment to gather the data didn't exist. Along the way, I had to invent the portable ultrasound feeding for heart imaging that's now commercial. And the first heart rate monitor that would be accurate on the galloping horse, and slow motion films digitized, And we had to invent the digitizing software, and then we gave it to the Olympic people, and now you see it everywhere, stick figures and multiple photos. And so it's been a long ride creating a lot of different modalities of sports medicine. And I hooked up early with someone named Patrice Miller, who was a trainer. And she'd been on with horses since she was 2 years old, bouncing on the back of a horse with her grandmother in a basket. And then she became a one of the first women jockeys in the United States, lied about her age. And then she was a trainer and was a leading trainer and set track records, one of which stood for 20 years in Monmouth Park. And so she's anchored us. And kind of we were eggheads until she got here. So I say, I look at the altimeter and she looks out the window to see if we're off the ground. And so the combination of me and her, and lately we've added a handicapper who's invented ways to invent what they call sheet number kind of things. And so you could look at horses on different tracks, different distances, different days, different conditions, and compare the performances to try when they came together with numbers. His name's Michael Kipnis. He's also known as the Wizard. You can find him his stuff on the Daily Racing Form website. So the combination is powerful, and the people who actually would like to win and not pay a fortune.
We're right.
I liken it to the industry to, like, if you wanted to go into yacht racing or having a yacht, and you can either pay a fortune and maybe never get the yacht out of the slip very often, or you can have it around a lot and do it right and not pay very much at all. And all the yachts in horse racing have a lottery ticket in the hull, which can be a bazillion bucks. But we can't promise a lottery ticket. Oh, we've hit it more than once, but we can tell you that we play the game, we win. A lot of our clients do make money or don't spend much to play the game. So that's what I do.
No, so it's so cool. You kind of said at the beginning, which I love the phrase you use, which is, you know, the money ball of horse racing. And so for those that haven't seen the movie or read the book and aren't familiar with that story, it was basically bucking against the trends of how you select the players before, which was usually looking at, you know, looking at just physical size and speed and other things that ultimately didn't necessarily translate to winning games. And so what you're doing is kind of taking that approach of kind of skewing the normal kind of stats or pedigree that a lot of people look at trying to select horses and looking at other data points that actually might be more predictive. So talk a little bit about that, of how the current industry is set up to where it's really focused on pedigree, right?
Absolutely. Now the big price is on pedigree, or if they go to a two-year-old auction, we can see them run. It's on who ran the fastest, where they run an eighth of a mile or a quarter of a mile. You know, big deal. You win the first half of the race with that horse. Yeah, I am an industry disruptor. I am not popular. They're all their pedigree and all their inventories and all their everything is on the pedigree. And it's a lousy predictor. Like 95% of the $1 million stallions, $1 million mares, 95% of what comes out is not a great racehorse. And if we couldn't beat those stats, we'd be out of business immediately. So yeah, we can do a lot better because, like at the Olympics, we didn't look at the parents, we looked at the athlete. That's what we do. And they'd say, well, the best pedigree horses is kind of self-fulfilling often because they get the best trainers and the best veterinarians and the best everything. But, you know, it's not a good predictor. And even if it, you know, and they said, so often I'm bucking the pedigree thing and they say, can't do it with that pedigree. Can't go the distance, can't do this, can't do turf. And I say, listen, you're going to tell me you can't throw snake eyes twice or you can't throw it three times in a row. It happens, but you got to be there to look. You can't look at the catalog page that describes the pedigree. You must look at the horse. Low probability events happen, and I've got to tech to find them. And not only is that nice because it means you can win more, but it also means you pay less because the market's not evaluating them that way. So it's a good, but it's, you know, it's really a closed industry and it's very traditional. And I'm still pretty unpopular. I've won the Triple Crown. I've won the Kentucky Derby twice for clients and been second in. I had 5 entries out of 20. Your chances of getting into the Kentucky Derby once in a lifetime are infinitesimal. We had 5 of our clients got qualified one in the starting gate at Touring Horses. And people still don't. They think we have theories, or who are they? Or they go to somebody who is a cheap imitation, doesn't have the data, doesn't have the technicians. You know, they have violin in the instruction book, but they can't play a symphony.
So what's the appeal of pedigree, right? I mean, I love horses. I mean, I think they're one of the coolest animals, you know, God created, but don't know much about horse racing. I don't know what constitutes a good horse. I've seen the movie Secretariat. I've seen, what was the other big movie? Seabiscuit.
Seabiscuit.
You know, now you see like, oh, this is the great, 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 great grandson of Secretariat or whatever. And that automatically creates that connection of, you know, I'm an offspring, or this is an offspring of a winning horse. Is that really what it is? Or is there some physical dynamics? I remember Secretariat had like a bigger heart or something, right?
It's not one thing. And that's the other thing. People find something that's predictive, whether it's scientific or otherwise, and they fall in love with it and they try and do it. But you're not really looking for the best pedigree or the best heart or the best gait. If the chain holding the Queen Mary has one link that's made out of paper mache, that's where it breaks. In the Olympic stuff, you're looking for the whole. The great, great horses don't have the best, the everything, but they've got a good everything. There are no holes. And so my job is looking for the holes. I don't get carried away with the best this or that. Secretariat, one of the things they got right in the movie was he wanted to run. He wanted to win. When I was younger and thinner, I actually exercised horses, race horses in the morning. We would go out in the farm with groups of five or six. And some, you had to strangle them to keep them from getting to the front where they weren't supposed to be yet and run it off. And some you had to, you know, keep working on to get them to keep up. And it wasn't the ability that was the difference. So the attitude makes a big difference. There are no free agents. So you also want to be able to spot who gives a damn. Although it's a whole lot easier to give a damn if you're not hurting. And it doesn't hurt to run. And you don't get as exhausted, you know. And there it's a big deal. Bigger lungs, bigger spleen. Blood dopes them naturally. It's an incredible thing that they can do to them with themselves. Like the Russians used to do cheating with blood doping. They have bigger lungs. They have bigger spleens. They have straighter legs. Their gait is more efficient. Their hearts are 50% bigger and pump more. There's a lot different about the elite. When I was with the Olympics, one of the things I learned was the elite athletes were as different medically from normal as normal is from sick or injured. So you can't assume you know what the hell's going on until you gather the data on those elite athletes. And I've got 40 years of that. So I know the differences. And the pedigree, everybody's still in love with pedigree. It's romantic. Yeah, it doesn't really work. I mean, it's not silly, but it's not very powerful. If 95% of the very most expensive, the mark of the best, you know, million-dollar, multi-million-dollar stallions, and multi-million-dollar mares, 95% of them aren't very good racehorses. Why? You can't work on that basis. Well, so think about it. What makes a horse a phenomenal champion? Why is it different than 99.9% of the rest of the horses? It probably has got some recessive genes to do that, or it wouldn't be so rare. And if the recessive, what good does it do to chase it unless you're kind of lucky and somehow you match it up with the other recessives? And there's different kinds of champions. There's, you know, the sprinters and the distance and the turf and the dirt and this and that. And there's some horses in the past that just built their reputation on cocaine before the testing. And, and now it's much more sophisticated, but they're still caught a few. They caught a horse that was disqualified from the Kentucky Derby was the one 2 years ago. And in other words, the major stallion and his trainers in jail because he was, you know, and they're right there in the stud book doing their thing. You know, how legitimate is that? And half of them are on Lasix, so they get this thing called epistaxis, where they hemorrhage in their lungs and their trachea, and they choke and they can't go a distance because of that. And, you know, like 70-80% of the horses are on medication to deal with that. So some of them are, you know, covering up this problem and then passing it on. So yeah, pedigrees, it's romantic and it's totally believed in by the majority of the experts, but that's why I'm the industry disruptor. It's so powerful. My track record can't even overcome it. Yeah. And I'm doing, you know, like 10 times better than the other guy, but then everybody lies about their track record or they show you the one horse they had. The experts right once. And people, you can verify the track records, but most people don't. Well, I mean, it's Damon Runyon. It's an industry of rascals. There's a lot of bad actors.
Yeah. I didn't actually watch the Kentucky Derby this year, But what I heard from multiple people is that there were the top three horses weren't even the big names on the list, right? The ones that ended up.
Nope. And the heavy favorite was 15th. He just kind of stopped. Nobody knows. Maybe he was lame or something. And a guy snuck through in a rail, so he ran probably, I don't know, you know, many yards less than anybody else had to because he got the rail trip. And he cost $40,000, and he was running against a horse that cost $2.5 million, and he beat him. But he actually ran, didn't run as far, but he beat him by this much. That's a $5 million purse, he beat him by this much. And it was why? Because his jockey was smart, and his trainer's a genius, Kenny McPeak. And they studied they got the rail, they got the one hole, so they knew they were going to be in the rail. They studied the last guy who pulled off 50-1 from the rail. A 50-1 upset with Mind That Bird was Calvin Burrell was a jockey, and they actually got together with him. They studied him, and they decided they were going to pull off the same thing if they could. The problem with that strategy is, at the right point, you have to have a hole to come through. The hole was the size of the crack under your door, you know? And if it closes, there's a collision, and you can die. But he took it, and had the teeny hole, and bang, he went right through, and bingo. Kentucky Derby to the working-class horse with a smart guy training and jockey. Good for them. Yeah. They beat the billionaire's horse. They beat $2.4 million as a baby because of the pedigree.
Right. Yeah, I think that's another point of this, too. It's like when you're using data, which gives you better predictive insights, but the other piece of it, to your earlier point, is the market's not paying for that, right?
I try to get them a pedigree. I try my best to get them something that does well and will have a pedigree that's at least enough to get a lot of money. I hate it, but I stay away from the ones with no pedigree, even if I think they're terrific, because it kind of screws your giant client. Even if he wins, it's not worth as much. I'm sorry to interrupt. But I do pay attention for the market, for the business part of it. I'm paying attention very sharply to pedigree, but not when I'm trying to find the athlete.
Yeah. I mean, from my perspective, from the investing side of things, if you're going after pedigree, you're going to pay a premium, a pretty penny to get one horse. And then, like you said, you're getting the best trainers, best.
Yeah, between 40,000 and 2 million, it can be. The difference is the pedigree, not the horse.
Right. And hey, what if you think that 2 million is spread across, 20 different horses and pay the same amount and you're increasing your odds substantially and potentially using better insight. So
I've done it. It's not a theory. I've done it for clients. I can actually show them a complete list of everything I bought from some client, how much it cost, what it earned, what it was resold for. Again, I can document the story. It works.
What's some of the magic, sort of secret sauce, right? I mean, this is your proprietary technique.
The secret sauce, like I say, I could give you the violin and the instruction book, but it play a symphony. But we buy horses that we know what they're supposed to look like, how they're shaped, the angles and the lengths of the different limb segments, we know how they're supposed to walk. We know when slow motion when they're running, whether it's clean, whether it wastes energy, and whether it's safe or not. And most of them, and the answer is no to both of those things. We know that their heart is bigger than, it's going to be as much as 50% bigger volume with pumping and thick walls of their heart. We know their spleen. In the horse, they ring their spleen when they leave the gate, when they get excited, and they dump an extra 70% red blood cells into their bloodstream. And that's an enormous effect on endurance. That's what the Russians were doing in the early Olympic blood doping scandals. But the horse does it naturally from evolution. So when the wolves came and they had to go from nothing to bang, from running, they could do that. And then we have trainers who, a lot of the lamenesses are very subtle. So we have heart rate meters on them, and you can tell if their heart rate is higher on one. They're different leads, one right, left, say, right handed, left handed. If it's higher on one lead than the other at the trot, you know that something hurts even before you can see it. So you have to, you can't run them better. They do get hurt. And it helps a diagnosis. We use all the latest diagnostic tools up to and including PET scans. Now, we don't run a horse with a subtle lameness, because if you do that, it hurts. And then they're creatures of habit. They learn if they try hard and it hurts, they ain't trying hard. And and then there's the diet, and everything else. It's a lot of people, a lot, even our blacksmiths. If they put the nail in wrong and the horse is sore, you know, you can, and there's a lot, horses aren't all the same. Their hooves are all different and this and that. Yeah. There's just so much. But when you get a good team, a good vet, a good blacksmith, a good trainer, and it's raised on a farm with a breeder who knows what the hell they're doing. My farm, it's like 200 acres and it looks like pastoral, just, you know, God's nature, but it's not. You know, we spent 40 years, so our pasture, our only grass is no nematodes, no tall fescues. It's all perennial ryegrass. There's all the things that can affect a horse's health, Lyme disease, nothing. It's all been carefully eliminated in all the ways they get hurt. You know, and we don't have anybody who doesn't know what they're doing. Some of these barns, honest to God, they pay $1 million for the horse, and the guy leading it around the shed row and the racetrack is a, you know, is a, under the table pay, below minimum wage. You know, what are they doing? And you can hurt the horse in a heartbeat. There's so many, they're so fragile. Well,
how much of it, from your standpoint, is nature versus nurture, right? How much of it is just biologically, physiologically, the horse's system, structure, stride is predisposed to make them?
It's 100% nature to begin with, but there's a thousand ways to screw it up, and people find them. Mm-hmm. So, that, you know, it's a rare guy who knows what to do with that. Some of the trainers, they're great horsemen, they're crappy managers, so they can't manage all the things. A lot of these big trainers, they got 200, 300 horses. How can they possibly pay all the attention to each one? They don't. So who does? You know, that's what you should be asking yourself. We've had horses that should have won the Kentucky Derby, and the ride finished them off. I could describe to you what goes wrong. They run up, they can't time it. They don't know the time. They go up and they end up running up somebody's rear end and having to stop, and then horses start again. So you have to take the inertial momentum of a 1,000-pound animal and restart it. You know, it doesn't work, or they get banged. We had one horse was a low odds in the Kentucky Derby, and he had the one all, and she didn't. We had the product. She didn't clear the field, and she didn't drop back. So the whole field came over on her and gave him a new racing stripe, scraped along the rail on his side. He never ran well again. It's just so many things that can go wrong. So I don't know. It's nature, nurture. It's, you know, it's a waste of your time to have a good team work on a horse that isn't the elite horse.
Right.
But the elite horse ain't enough. You need the team. You need the team.
So going to the just nature side of it, I mean, you do buy young horses, right? You
absolutely. I look at it on the cool
aspects of, we think this has the good chances. It has at least the, you know, the material that we can work with to have,
right,
have chances. So what are the things that you're looking for biologically at that kind of first point to make a decision of,
Well, first of all, we've got DNA markers now that we generated from our databases about the strength of the heart and the thickness of the wall muscle and other things about them. So we have some DNA stuff. Secondly, we get a two-year-old in training cell I'm going to next week. The horses will run by. We will video them in high-definition slow motion and take those videos and take them apart and look for how, whether they move their, throw their legs around inefficiently, whether they, or everything's straight, or whether the angle is going to cause chips and all kinds of things in their bum. They chip their knees, they chip their sesamoids, their ankles. So we're looking for all those. We have x-rays to make sure they're all together. We look down their throat with an endoscope to see the function of their larynx. The longest nerve in nature is the front, in these horses, is goes from his base of their brain all the way down their neck and then all the way back again. So it's called recurrent laryngeal, and then back to their larynx. And it fails in a lot of the horses. And when it does, when they get under stress and they're running hard, it closes their airway and they can't breathe. So they stop. And it happens to a lot of horses. And you got to know, you can see in advance whether it's a flaccid epiglottis or a whole larynx function, or whether it's displacing, or they call it displacing. And you have to weed those. You know, there are operations for that, but why buy a problem? You know, so we've got the film, we've got the internal organ scans. We're looking down their throat. We're X-raying them. We do look at their pedigree, we just to see if the mare has produced anything. If she's had like 9 foals and nobody did anything, she may be teaching that baby before it leaves her whatever it is he shouldn't know, like they'll dry hard. And so that's the bad side.
So how
is it? Yeah, there's just a long checklist. I mean, we go through everything. Then you have to pass every single test or they're out. We are not going to take a weak link in that chain. You know, that weak link is where it breaks.
So how do you look at the qualitative measures? You said, yeah, the thing of the Secretariat at going for him is he just wanted to run, right? How do you find that?
It's very hard, but I'll tell you, give you some stories. We had one horse, we went to see the yearlings at a farm, and they were like, I don't know, a lot of yearlings, like 20, 30 yearlings in this field. And they call them into food, and they all come running up to the gate, right? And then the Red Sea parts, and there's one that comes forward. And we're just like, God damn, that's a dominant animal. We want, and she became a champ. There was another one named Club Fighter. We went out in the field to see the yearlings, and there was only one horse out there with a long tail a year. Nobody was biting and pulling on his tail. We bought him, and he was a fighter. And I bought one named Pinky Pizwinski, and I went to the stall. We'd done all this shit, and I went to the stall before the auction to look at him. I just wanted to see. I want to stand as I'm standing in his presence, and I'm kind of meditating, close my eyes, and look at him. And he looks up at me, and I swear to God, what he said was, "What are you looking at?" And I said, "That's the guy. That's what I want." And that's who he was. That's who he was. You're not going to beat him staring him down, man. You had to run him down. And he came within like a tenth of a second of the 20-year-old track record at Laurel that was set on the grass by a legend, Kelso, who's horse of the year like six times. That was wild. And he had a lousy pedigree. Well, not lousy, but nothing special. But if you're going to beat him, you had to run. And he was never flustered. He was in the paddock. There'd be crowds and blah, blah. He didn't give a damn. He just didn't care. I loved that horse.
So how do you make money as someone that invests in race horses, right? Is obviously, if you win a race, you're making some money. From the pride of winning.
No, it's a breeding. It's the money. Well, these days there's so many multi-million dollar races. That's not so true anymore. But yeah, breeding traditionally has been the way to make your money. It's better to buy females, the fillies, because a big stallion will cover maybe 200 mares, 250 mares a year. And, you know, and so you're going to have 200, 250 times as many multi-million dollar worthwhile mares that you can develop that have to get to the top stallions as you can the top stallions. So why not buy the mares? And so that's, you know, so that's one strategy. And we buy mares that people want. They can make their own pedigree. If they win enough big races, that people want that as a pedigree. The stallion, it's different. You have to have, nobody really believes it. Honestly, it's kind of a mid-classic pedigree. So it's easier to buy the fillies, and they can make their own pedigree, but we make sure that they have enough that nobody will think it was a freak. And and we're after reselling the horses, and we've resold a lot of horses over $1 million, and some of them for many, many millions of dollars. And that's the big payday. That's get out horse. The other thing, the other rule of thumb is don't, if you're going to buy one or two horses, you know, have a lot of fun, but that's not business. Let's say you either have a team or you don't. You know, you got to buy enough horses so the odds can work for you.
Right. Oh, you're saying make your own pedigree. You mean the horses are winning, so now they have...
If you win a grade one race, there's 100 grade one, what are called grade one races, like the Kentucky Derby or the World Championships. 100 grade one races in the world a year, and if you win one or two of those with your mare, unless it's by truck out of West, they're going to think that they're going to want that mare. Somebody's going to pay a lot of money because they're going to breed.
Got it.
When I say, they say buy the stallion's name and then out of the mare's... Buy Secretariat out of, I don't know, Madcap Escapade. So that's why the joke is buy truck out of West for the horses with no pedigree.
Okay. One of my last questions. So in our industry, you know, we have a colloquialism that it's not the horse, it's the jockey. And the idea is, you know, when you're investing in a property, you want to look at the property, you want to make sure it's got good bones, a good location, but how you manage that property is the bigger success driver, right? So I don't know how much that you know holds true in horse racing. I know
more than as much or more than anywhere else, because there's so many baloney bullshit artists or guys who are just rascals. And without the proper management, which doesn't usually happen, you really don't have a shot. There's too many ways it goes wrong. So you really need to get somebody, A, you can trust, and B, that has done it, proven they can do it not once, but regularly. Or you're really kind of, you'll pay too much and your odds will be poor. I don't care what the horse. I don't care if it's secretary. I honestly think there's a lot of trainers who wouldn't do well as secretary. There's too many things they would have done wrong.
Yeah. So how do you attract a good jockey to a non-pedigree horse, right? I mean,
first of all, you got to have a trainer. If you got the right trainers and we have those relationships, the trainer will tell the jockey, this guy's for real. You want to be on him. There I want to win. So the trainer will tell him, when the horse in his workouts and in this and that and the other, in our track record. So when we go to somebody like Bob Baffert, one of the top trainers, Bill Mott, and we say, this is as good a horse as we've ever found. And you're going to train. And, there's no problem getting a good jockey. We get good jockeys. They want to ride them.
So if someone wants to go after this, it's like, hey, I like this. I want to put some money here. I want to go try this out. Obviously, you have the upfront cost of finding the horses. But then what's kind of the ongoing costs with the trainers?
I can give them examples of what other people do, but it costs anywhere from $4,000 to $5,000 a month for each racehorse's upkeep at the trainer.
Okay.
You're going to spend $40,000 to, the sky's the limit to buy the horse.
Right.
And, and if it's a decent horse, you'll probably be in at 15, 20 grand before you'll have a chance to earn anything back. But if he's a decent horse, within the first year, he should break even and then start earning money. And, some of them get hurt, some of them get sick, and some of them don't give a shit, so you need more than one horse. But we tell people you should buy anywhere from 5 to 10, and then you're if you've got the right people, you're going to probably have a good ride, a good run, have some fun. Probably if you won't lose much money, and you may make a lot. But it's a risk return, it's a high risk, high return industry.
Yeah.
I think those are the numbers.
Cool.
We've had clients who put in $40 million. We had one who put in $40 million. And 5 years later, it was $64 million, and he won a hell of a lot, and he bet a hell of a ride. Good time. He won everything there was to win. So I think he thought he was had a good time, having worth his while.
He kind of sounds like it.
And then you have some that don't listen to you. They use three or four different agents. One guy, we pawned him like $1 million worth of horses. And they earned back $1.5 million, but he spent $3 million with other agents on other cuffs and didn't do anything. So he lost money overall. So he thought, this doesn't work. And then he did, give me a break. What do I have to do?
Jeff, well, this has been really fun. I appreciate you coming on and sharing some of your knowledge. What's the best way for folks to get a hold of you and learn about what you do?
The best way to get a hold of me is, our website or my cell phone. The website's just EQB, like Equine Biometrics. But it's not .com, it's .fyi. .fyi. And my cell phone, I guess, is...
give us...
LinkedIn or something.
Why is that one? You have an email, right?
I have an email. It's just my name, Jay Seder, J-S-E-D-E-R. J-S-E-D as in dog, E-R, at EQB.fyi. And, if people want to put their toe in the cold water, we have people we trust to do partnerships, and we can direct them there. They can have a piece of one horse, learn something about the industry that way too, and have some fun. You don't have to, you don't have to jump in them right away. And, we like to talk horses, so we're happy to talk to people. And we're at the auctions. Meet us at the auctions. Meet us at the racetracks. It's better than a cubicle in the insurance building. I wanted to work with horses. I wanted to be outside. So thank you, God.
That's awesome. Well, appreciate you coming on the show and definitely love what you're doing. And it's fun to highlight some of the cool insights that you've discovered in the past few decades and definitely sharing the love of horses. So appreciate you coming on.
I really appreciate this opportunity. Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks so much.
This is the Invest Like a Billionaire podcast, where we uncover the alternative investments and strategies that billionaires use to grow wealth. The tools and tactics you'll learn from this podcast will make you a better investor and help you build legacy wealth. Join us as we dive into the world of alternative investments, uncover strategies of the ultra wealthy, discuss economics, and interview successful investors.